On this show, we will talk about space diseases.
All diseases are constantly coming from outer space.
Fake dinosaurs.
He said that a fossil in the London Museum of Natural History that's showing the evolution between dinosaurs and birds was a fake.
A dying universe.
Everything dies out in the universe, and everything becomes...
Warning. True Stories and Science is for mature audiences only. Open minds are advised. Broadcasting from the West Coast, here's Evan Weiss.
Joining me today is Paul Halpern. He's a professor of physics at the University of Sciences. He is a prolific science writer. His latest book is Flashes of Creation. Paul Halpern, welcome to the show, and how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm doing fine, thank you.
What inspired you to write the Flashes of Creation?
Well, I've always been very interested in the life and the works of George Gamow and Fred Hoyle. Both of them were fascinating characters. Both of them were popularizers. They wrote some amazing science books and science fiction, and they also made pivotal contributions to the study of the universe.
Okay. And I know there was a big debate between both of them. I think one of them was the debate between the Big Bang theory and the steady state theory. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's correct. Well, even though Fred Hoyle was an advocate of the steady state theory, he was the one who coined the term Big Bang. And he meant that as kind of an insult. He used it disparagingly when he was on BBC Radio in 1949, because Fred Hoyle thought it was inherently ridiculous, the idea that all matter and energy will be created at one point in the past, billions of years ago. He just thought that there should be a better explanation. So steady state imagines that matter and energy is created very, very slowly in tiny drops over the eons, and that's something that could be measured. The Big Bang theory, on the other hand, imagines that everything was created in the distant past. And the initial problem with the Big Bang theory, which was advocated by George Gamow, was that it predicted that the universe was 2 billion years old or so, 2 or 3 billion years old, whereas some of the stars, or many of the stars, are much older than that. Earth is older than that. So there were contradictions in the Big Bang theory, which is why a number of people advocated for steady state. And so that is why many people were advocates of steady state in the 1950s.
And why was one theory adopted and the other discarded?
Well, in 1964, two astronomers, Arno Penzias and Bob Wilson, were looking using a radio telescope in New Jersey for signs of signals from the Milky Way, indicating a halo from the Milky Way. And then they discovered that no matter which way they pointed their instrument, they detected this strange hiss. And they thought at first it was noise from New York City, and they ruled out the noise from New York. They ruled out environmental sounds. And then finally, they were interested in the idea, they considered the idea that perhaps pigeons were dropping their waste material on the telescope. So they cleaned up the telescope, they trapped the pigeons, they did everything they could, and the hiss remained. So they were perplexed, but then somebody they knew told them about a group at Princeton University headed by somebody named Bob Dickey, who were investigating the possibility of signals from the early universe. So Penzias called Bob Dickey, and Bob Dickey immediately said, yes, it's probably something from the early universe. They went out to investigate, and sure enough, it was a signal from the early universe, kind of showing that the universe was once hot and dense. And that is called the cosmic microwave background radiation. And that was the telltale sign that the universe once had a hot beginning, and that negated the idea of the steady state, which says that the universe is pretty much the same over time.
And now, is that the same thing as the noise on a television? Is that sort of the Big Bang's background radiation?
Yes, for an old-style television with an antenna, if there's nothing being broadcast, and I remember that from when I was a child, that television would stop broadcasting after a certain time, there would be a hiss, and part of that hiss is our signals from the early universe, amazingly.
And how was it determined that the hiss was, in fact, background noise left over from the Big Bang?
Well, you can measure the frequency spectrum of that hiss carefully using a spectrometer. You can then determine, based on that frequency spectrum, there's a physics theory called black body radiation that says if radiation has a certain frequency distribution, you can calculate the temperature. And they calculated the temperature to be something like 3 degrees above absolute zero. And there were predictions by Gamow's team, somebody named Ralph Alpher and Bob Herman, saying that if the universe was hot in the beginning, that radiation cooled off should be a few degrees above absolute zero. And in fact, the radiation from the hiss was a few degrees above absolute zero. Another reason they thought it was from the early universe is because no matter which direction they pointed it, it seemed exactly the same. Now, today we know that there are subtle differences in the temperature of the radiation, reflecting the fact that the universe at the time that the radiation was emitted was starting to form the seeds of matter, and those seeds were slightly hotter than places where matter was not being formed. So there's a very, very slight difference, but measurable difference, in the temperature of that hiss throughout space that reflects the fact that the universe is not 100% uniform, but rather has some differences from place to place due to the fact that there's matter in some places and not matter in other places. So that shows that the hiss came from the Big Bang.
Does the second law of thermodynamics contradict the Big Bang theory?
Well, the second law of thermodynamics says that everything is tending towards greater and greater disorder. You need a Big Bang that has a certain amount of order. If the Big Bang was completely disordered, completely high entropy, as they say, entropy is a measure of disorder, then the universe couldn't really progress from there, according to the second law of thermodynamics. So you need a certain amount of orderly energy at the beginning of the universe for life and any activity to eventually happen.
Interesting. Okay. And why is it still called a theory, in your opinion?
Well, theory in physics doesn't mean it's not proven. You can have proven theories. In mathematics, a theorem is something that's absolutely proven. For example, the Pythagorean theorem is something that is very well known. So theory is not a disparaging term. It just means that it's something that can be proven and it has been proven.
What is singularity?
So interestingly enough, around the time that the cosmic microwave background radiation was detected, Roger Penrose came up with a proof that black holes eventually collapse into a singularity, which is a point of infinite density. So imagine a huge amount of matter, the matter of, let's say, 100 times the mass of the sun, or at least 20 times the mass of the sun, something like that, crammed into a point that is infinitesimally small. Well, that would have an infinitesimal, an infinite density, and that's what a singularity is. It's hard to fathom. Well, Stephen Hawking took Roger Penrose's proof, flipped it in time, looked backward in time to the start of the Big Bang, and proved that the Big Bang must start from a point of infinite density.
And what was there before the Big Bang, Paul?
Well, interestingly enough, Bob Dickey, who was the one who proved that the and his student Jim Peebles proved that the detection by Penzias and Wilson had something to do with a hot early universe. Bob Dickey didn't start out as a real believer in a singularity or in a single Big Bang. He believed in an oscillating universe, that something existed before the present universe that collapsed and formed the Big Bang. Well, there's a controversy about that because mainstream physicists believe that the Big Bang started in a singularity, so therefore there was nothing before it. But there are ideas in which the universe recycles itself. So there are several ideas, including one by Paul Steinhardt called the cyclic cosmology. And Roger Penrose has an idea of conformal cyclic cosmology in which there are previous cycles of the universe.
Well, that's actually my next question. What is conformal cyclic cosmology? And can you dive into that a little bit more?
Well, it's mathematically rather rigorous, but it has an idea that there are certain mathematical transformations that can take something that is very large and transform that very large thing mathematically into something very small. So it's a mathematical mapping of something that is huge to something that is very small. And that can happen if the universe is empty. So what Penrose imagines is that someday everything dies out in the universe and everything becomes either a stellar relic or a black hole. And these black holes slowly emit radiation and lose their mass that way. And perhaps even the particles of the universe, such as the protons, are unstable over time. So Penrose imagines what happens when the universe is absolutely empty or close to empty, and in which case it becomes something like a vacuum. And for a vacuum, you can define this transformation called a duality, in which you take a large universe, transform it into a small universe. So suddenly the universe, instead of thinking it's large, thinks it's very, very small. And then it is empty. It is somehow free of entropy just because of this transformation, and starts all over again. So it's a little bit hard to imagine, but it's a mathematical transformation that does this.
Interesting. Now, do you think the 20th century was a golden age of physics? And if so, why?
Well, the 20th century was a golden age, partly because of the formulation by Einstein of general relativity, and before that, special relativity, the theory of quantum mechanics, nuclear physics came about in the 20th century. And finally, modern cosmology emerged with Einstein's theory, with Lemaître's idea that the universe started in what became known as the Big Bang, with Hubble's discovery of the expanding universe, and then Gamow's proposal that the Big Bang created all the material in the universe, which turned out to be partly right. The Big Bang created most of the helium in the universe, but as Hoyle showed with his colleagues, stars in their dying phase, as their cores contract and become very hot, create the other chemical elements. So that was an amazing discovery too. As I talk about in my book, Flashes of Creation, the combination of Hoyle's idea of material being produced in stars and Gamow's idea that some of the material was produced during the Big Bang explains how all the chemical elements from hydrogen to uranium formed, all the natural chemical elements, which is a phenomenal discovery. So in my book, I show how they were mavericks, they were incredibly creative, and came up with these discoveries which have revolutionized our understanding of the universe. Gamow wrote a series of books called the Mr. Tompkins series, imagining a bank clerk stumbling into all these variations of the universe, like ones in which the speed of light is really very small. So the bank clerk starts to see relativistic effects. So there's this wonderful series of books, and also something called 1-2-3 Infinity, which is a very influential science book. And Hoyle wrote a lot of science fiction, including The Black Cloud and A for Andromeda, which was a television series. So they got a lot of recognition for that. And they both won something called the Kalinga Prize for science popularization. Okay. But neither of them won a Nobel Prize. They were each nominated for a Nobel Prize. And there's some speculation in Gamow's case that because he was seen as a popularizer, people weren't as familiar with his scientific contributions. And in fact, when the cosmic microwave background was discovered, originally a lot of the press went to Penzias Wilson and to Dickey and Peebles, and Gamow came out and said, hey, wait a minute, we were the ones who first predicted this stuff. So finally Gamow, Alpher, and Hermann got some recognition for that. And Gamow died fairly young, so he might have won a Nobel Prize if he had lived long enough. And Hoyle was, in his later years, unfortunately, because of some of his later theories, considered a kind of fringe scientist.
What theories were those?
Well, in his later years, he came up with this idea called panspermia.
Oh, yeah.
Which is that I've heard that all, one. That all life came from outer space. And that wasn't so bad in a way, but then he started to say, well, all diseases are constantly coming from outer space. And, you know, for example, he said that Legionnaire's disease, AIDS, and all these diseases which were emerging in the late 20th century, he said, oh, that comes from space. And people were in some ways offended by that. He said that a fossil in the London Museum of Natural History that's showing the evolution between dinosaurs and birds was a fake without really supplying evidence for that. And that made people very upset. So that was before his colleague, Willie Fowler, won the Nobel Prize for the theory of the chemical elements being created in stars. And that was originally Hoyle's idea. So people were a bit outraged that Hoyle didn't share the Nobel Prize with Willie Fowler. Willie Fowler helped prove the idea, but Hoyle was the one who originally came up with the idea.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, panspermia doesn't seem so far-fetched today, especially with the idea of maybe finding microbes on asteroids or other planets. But the other ones do seem a little far-fetched still.
George Gamow. As I mentioned, he wrote all these popular science books. He came up with pivotal ideas in nuclear physics, like the describing alpha decay. He, in addition to his cosmological ideas, he contributed to modern genetics by coming up with, through a deck of cards, the idea that of shuffling cards, that that shuffling the genetic material in RNA could lead to a description of how amino acids were formed. So he suggested that to James Watson and others. So he was remarkably diverse, and he was a cartoonist. He drew his own cartoons for his books. And then Hoyle wrote operas with Leo Schmidt. He was very interested in music. He wrote the science fiction. He was a mountain climber.
Oh, wow.
So he climbed every major mountain in Scotland before he died. So these were Renaissance people.
Yeah, they definitely were Renaissance people.
Yeah. And they had remarkable backgrounds. Gamow was born in Odessa, which was part of the Russian Empire. And when... after the Russian Revolution, he went to St. Petersburg and he worked there. But then he was frustrated because as the Soviet Union developed, travel was very restricted, and he was restricted to going to conferences in Western Europe. So finally, he and his young wife, Roe decided to try to escape using a rubber kayak in the Black Sea. And they were going to sail to Turkey and claim that they were Danish and get a Danish passport and go to Copenhagen where they could work with Niels Bohr. But unfortunately, there was stormy weather, so they were blown back to the shore. But then remarkably, Niels Bohr managed to get them to be, or at least Gamov, George Gamov, to be appointed as the Russian representative or Soviet representative to the Salve Conference of 1933. And he was able to find a visa, and he talked his way into getting his wife a visa. So they both went to the 1933 Salve Conference and escaped from the Soviet Union that way, which is an incredible story. And Hoyle, in his later years, one of the reasons why he perhaps became known as a bit of a fringe scientist is because in the early 1970s, he had an Institute of Astronomy in Cambridge, and he was very successful there and very respected there. And that's around the time that he got a knighthood by Queen Elizabeth. He became Sir Fred. And then the Institute was merged into something else, and he was very upset about it. So he abruptly left Cambridge and went to a mountain peak in the Lake District, which is a remote district of England, with his wife. And that was not a very good place to do science because he was suddenly very remote. And that's when he began to just come up with ideas on his own and work on those rather than exploring what the mainstream scientific community was doing. And his daughter told me, Hoyle's daughter Liz Butler said that it's a shame because he might have wasted many good years of science that way by being on a mountaintop in the middle of nowhere.
But doesn't sometimes solitude really give you really good insights on discoveries? I know there's a lot of cases where in science that's happened.
Well, that's true that he had a lot of time for his thoughts, which maybe benefited his science fiction and his speculation. But it wasn't very good for example, his work on the origin of life, because he really had one collaborator on that and couldn't really collaborate with other people very easily.
Okay. What else about the book do you want our listeners to know? Because it's a very interesting book. I really, really enjoyed reading it.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I think readers should know that Flashes of Creation is a non-technical book. I talk about the full history of the Big Bang. It's been very well reviewed so far. Reviews today in the New York Times just came out in Science News, and there's been a lot of praise for the book. And one thing I like to do in my history of science books is to really show the human side of the people involved. I show Gamov's strengths and his flaws and problems that developed. He had a lot of health problems in his later years because of his excess drinking, unfortunately. And I show a lot of humor in the book. Gamov loved to pull pranks. He loved puns. For his big paper on the Big Bang, he had a student named Ralph Alpher, and he decided to make a pun on the name Alpher, which is like the Greek letter Alpha, and Gamov, which is like the Greek letter Gamma, by adding the name Hans Beta to the paper to make it Alpha Beta Gamma. So it's known as the Alpha Beta Gamma paper. And That's Beta cool. didn't even know that would happen, and he didn't contribute to the paper, which upset Alpher because Alpher was the main contributor to the paper.
Right.
But anyway, there's a lot of funny stories in the book, so I think readers would really enjoy it.
I think often we don't get to see that side of scientists. We don't get to see the human side, and I think this book really highlights those human elements of their lives. And how important are popularizers, in your opinion, for science?
Well, I think it's great for science to be well known to the general public. And Gamow and Hoyle, as I show in my book Flashes of Creation, were experts at making science palatable and understandable. And that's perhaps why the battle between the Big Bang and the steady state was so well known in the 1950s. I tracked down in my book a letter from a boy who was living in coal country in Pennsylvania at the time and was going to a library and found out about the Big Bang versus steady state battle and wrote a letter to Bob Dickey asking his opinion about it for a science fair project. And I found, I Googled the name of the boy because I found his letter in an archive, and he's now a computer science professor and still remembered writing that letter and was astonished that I found his letter as a boy in an archive and said he had needed that information for a project. And unfortunately, a biology project won out. So he told me that what happened in that story. So, but anyway, he was one of many children who were and grown-ups who were interested in this battle between the Big Bang and steady state just because of these popularizers.
Thank you, Paul Halpern, for being on the show. Where can people find more information about Flashes of Creation?
Flashesofcreation.com. And I have a Twitter page, which is at P. Halpern, the first initial, my first name, and then my last name, Halpern.
Paul Halpern, thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure. It's really exciting to be on your show. Thank you very much.
If you made it this far, you're truly a sage. And we want to thank you for listening to True Stories in Science. Like, follow, and subscribe to support this show.